Archie's War.
Everybody's always interested in the Indian Wars, so I would like to tell you about a war that means a lot to me personally. It was the 20-year war between myself and my Choctaw father. On many things, we disagreed. The war really began when another war was going on in Vietnam. I felt we shouldn't be fighting it. My father was a World War II veteran, so he felt differently. I wore my hair well down my back. He wore his in a crew cut. I felt I was a grown-up. He thought I was a child. On many things, we disagreed. My brother Danny was just 2 years older than me, and when he volunteered to fight in Vietnam, the whole family gathered at Houston Hobby Airport to see him off. My mother had arranged for a photographer to be there. She kept saying, "It might be the last picture of all of us together." The photographer had taken half a dozen shots and was about to leave when my father stopped him. "Just one more. I want at least one picture without him in it," he said, pointing to me. So I stepped aside. When the plane had taken off and we were on our way to the parking lot, I said to my father, "You know, it's a shame he has to be going. It's more your war than it is his." My father just stopped and looked at me. I walked away. A year later, my father wrote and asked me to work with him on the pipeline for the summer. I was paying my way through college and needed the money, so I flew out to North Carolina to join him. But I got a haircut first, a shoulder-length haircut at least. As we were driving to his trailer house, my father said, "You're going to have to cut some more of that hair off before you go to work." "I already got a haircut. I know, just to appease your old man," he said. So the next morning, I slept till 10, then drove into one of the nearby towns looking for a barbershop. I circled the courthouse square a few times till I spotted that candy cane pole you used to see outside a barbershop. When I entered the shop, there was nobody else there, and the barber just looked at me. "Look," I said, "my dad's making me get a haircut. Just do a little trimming. I'll pay you full price, and I'll be on my way." "All right, I'll take care of you," he said, and I sat down in the barber chair. He started off with the scissors, clipping round the edges. Then I heard a sound that should have warned me. It was only the clippers, but it went on for far too long. And every time I tried to look down to the floor to see the little pile of hair there, he'd slap my chin. "Look up, boy, I can't cut unless you keep still." Shortly, another customer opened the door, and I felt a whoosh of a breeze on the back of my neck, where I hadn't felt a breeze in years. "That'll do it," the barber said. He powdered me up and spun me around in the chair. "What do you think?" I was bald as a cue ball. "I don't think it's what I asked for, but I guess we can't do anything about it now." I reached for my wallet, and he said, "Oh, that won't be necessary. Your father already took care of that." Round one went to Archie. The next day began a stretch of 6 weeks in a row without a single day off, working with my father on the pipeline. Most of that time was actually spent under the pipeline, for that's how the welding was done. We'd climb into a ditch dug under the 42-inch diameter pipe. My father wore a helmet with a protective glass shield to look through, for he'd spend much of his day staring at a burning electrical arc as he'd draw a bead on that weld, tying the pipe together with a good clean weld. Ever so often, he would hold out a gloved hand without even looking at me, and I'd slap a welding rod into it. He'd attach it and go right back to that arc. It was summertime, like I said, and it was hot, well over 100 degrees. Even hotter than that at the bottom of that hole, and we wore undershirts and 3 layers of khaki shirts to protect us from the falling sparks. I knew now why my dad always had blisters on his neck, from where a piece of fallen trash metal would get under the collar. But when that happened, he couldn't flinch. He might have a piece of metal burning through his skin, but he had to stay right with that arc to draw a good, clean bead. There were some characters on that pipeline. During a lunch break, I got to see Old Man Fiddler go through his favorite routine. He was nearing 65 years, but he was union, so they kept him on. He'd follow the pipeline, picking up trash and used welding rods, and he'd say, "I get up every morning, look in the mirror, see my belly hanging out. I lean forward, tuck my shirt in, then look behind me, see something else showing back there. So I lean back, tuck it in good, but Lord, my belly be popping out. So I go to tucking it in again. Seem like I spend all my days tucking and a-leaning and a-tucking and a-leaning. Life's hard when you're old." We young ones, we would laugh at old Fiddler. I saw him do this dozens of times, and I would give anything to see him do it again. And there was Jim. Big Jim, everybody called him. He was part German, had silvery hair and steely blue eyes, and he worked alone up ahead of everybody else. It was his job to guide the pipe right over the hole. With a crane hoisting the pipe up, he'd push and position it right where it needed to be before the crane would lower it down. He seemed friendly enough, but if I tried to walk over to talk to him early in the morning, my father would say, "Get away from there. Don't touch that crane. Get on away." Jim would just shrug his shoulders and wave. I thought, why is my old man so mean? That's what I thought. One morning, about 11 o'clock, the foreman came walking up slow. Then he leaned down into the trench. "Archie," he called. "What's wrong?" my dad asked, taking his helmet off. "We're taking the rest of the day off. The crane hit a high-voltage electrical wire. Big Jim had his hand on the crane. He died." "Okay," my dad said. "All right. See you tomorrow morning." "Yeah," the foreman said, and he walked on to tell the next welder. As that long, hot summer drew to a close, word went round about a storm, a hurricane blowing up on the coast. We caught the first heavy rainstorm one late afternoon, and my dad's truck got stuck. He was mad about somebody having to come help him pull him out. When the truck backed up to his, he told me, "Get out and hook the tow chain up." I stepped out of the truck. By now the tires were spinning and his bumper was deep in the muddy soup. He leaned out the window. "Do it, son, hook it up." I looked at all the mud, and instead of hooking it to the axle, I just hooked the chain around the bumper. So when the tow truck started pulling, the bumper bent and the chain went flying. My father was so mad. "You ain't got the sense God gave a man to get in out of the rain," he said to me. Then he climbed into the mud and hooked the chain around the axle himself. I just stood there looking at him. When the tow truck started up, my father yelled, "Get out of the way, boy! Chain might pop! Move away!" I just stood there, didn't move a muscle. Finally, when he was pulled free, I undid the chain and climbed into the cab. My dad was hollering mad now. "Son, if that chain broke, it could cut your head off!" I didn't reply till we were underway, then muttered to the window in a voice barely audible, "That would make you real happy. Then I'd be out of the picture completely. That would make your day." That's what I said to him. Now, I'm not proud of everything I said. I'm just recounting the story. We didn't speak 10 words for several days, till the job was over and the real storm blew in on the final day. It started out a light rain, and we smelled the pine woods, and it was sweet and clean. But when the rain fell heavy, the smell of diesel fuel stuck to your skin. With a storm coming, an old school bus came to pick the helpers up. I watched the bus roll by and waved at old man Fiddler. Then a face appeared and disappeared at the back of the bus. Looked to me like Big Jim, but he didn't wave. He just placed his 10 fingers on the rear window and gazed at me with those steely blue eyes, then vanished in the mist and the rain. The wind was really blowing now. Branches were flying off the trees. A bunch of workers piled into Dad's truck. There wasn't room for me. "You're going to have to ride on back," Dad said. "And, son, I can't stop once we get moving." "Okay." "No, listen to me. We're driving into a storm. We drive 5 miles an hour. We move as a group so we don't pile up out here. If you fall off, roll out of the way and get on the first truck you can. Ain't nobody going to stop for you. You hear me?" "Yes, sir." He turned away and started that clattering old diesel engine. I hoisted myself up and wrapped my left arm around the iron brace, holding the welding rig to the back of the truck. Soon the smell of dust became the smell of mud, red clay mud slick with rainwater. When the storm hit, the rain broke the surface of the road like the tiny beaks of blind little birds, opening and closing. Then the rain hit like fat, cold stones. And I was alone, and I was cold, and I felt like an abandoned child. The first sheet of rain soaked through every stitch of clothing, boots, socks, three shirts, jeans. When the wind hit, it came from the opposite direction as the rain, from behind me, and even though the cab broke the gale, it hit me with such force, I watched three buttons pop off my khaki shirt. A short while later, my arm cramped up and the sharp edge of the iron brace rubbed and blistered through the skin of my upper arm. I thought of moving, then saw the danger of falling off, a bump in the road, a gust of wind. So instead, I took to biting my tongue, then the inside of my cheek, soft at first, then hard, hoping to focus on the lesser pain and not the one in my arm. The harder I bit, the easier this became, until I tasted blood and ran my tongue across a deep, swollen cut on the inside of my mouth. I realized I had been shivering and crying for probably an hour. And on we crawled, 26 miles, 5 miles an hour, in the cold and never-ending rain. When the truck finally pulled onto the makeshift parking lot, my father unwrapped my arm from the welding brace and lifted me onto the ground. I was shivering and sobbing, and my teeth were chattering hard. "What were you thinking?" he asked me. I was scared. I thought I might die. "What did you do?" I hung on. And I prayed. He just nodded. Then he reached up and grabbed the short bristles of my hair down to my scalp and gave it a good hard tug. "You are all right," he said. And at that moment, I knew that I was. I watched my father's tan khakis turn dark brown in the downpour. "Ain't got the sense God gave a man to get in out of the rain," I told him. He closed his eyes, and when he reopened them, it was just he and I, just the two of us. The other trucks were pulling away. There we stood in the pouring down rain. I would like to tell you that our lives changed from that moment on, but life doesn't work that way. Our wars went on for several years, until I had my own son, Jacob, and began to see fatherhood from the other side. The last 10 years of his life, my father became my finest, deepest friend. But I think he always knew he would be. From that long, hot summer on the pipeline, we knew that when darkness falls at noon, when the rain turns to cold, hard stones, we knew we prayed to the same God. We clung to the same thin thread of his mercy. This my father gave to me, and this I gave to my son.